I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Confronting racism face-to-face. That's what musician Daryl Davis has been doing for more than 25 years.
When two enemies are talking, they're not fighting.
But are they changing each other's minds? Mr. Davis, who is black, has befriended dozens of members of the Ku Klux Klan. He's featured in a new documentary called Accidental Courtesy. Today, a conversation about ways to challenge racism and bias. Daryl Davis joins me along with Dr. Ray Winbush, the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University, and Gilbert Bliss, the psychotherapist who focuses on issues of race and white privilege. Converting the Klan, is it possible? Midday starts right after the news. And good afternoon, everybody. Happy President's Day. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad that you're joining us here on this holiday here for Midday. In this age of political polarity, many politicians fear reprisal at the polls if they're perceived to be reaching across the aisle. Strict adherence to dogma seems to be the unwritten law of the political jungle. But if we refuse to engage with people who are ideologically opposed to us, do we preclude any chance of solving the underlying issues that separate us? And at what point do we say that some positions are simply too abhorrent, some philosophies too repugnant, to be engaged in any other way than to condemn them as morally bankrupt? Take, for example, the Ku Klux Klan. Is there any way that people who abhor bigotry and racism can constructively engage with a member of this organization whose history includes the kind of extreme intolerance that has led to terrorism and the deaths of countless people? Well, Daryl Davis thinks that the answer is yes. He's a black musician, an accomplished pianist who's played with the likes of Little Richard and Chuck Berry. More than 25 years ago, after a gig in Frederick, he began a conversation with an audience member who eventually revealed that he was a member of the KKK. Davis didn't stop the conversation after that revelation, and he and that man have been talking ever since. In fact, Davis has subsequently met and befriended many Klan members from around the country, some of whom have left the Klan, renounced their racist past, and even given Daryl Davis their robes and hoods and other Klan paraphernalia. Daryl Davis wrote a book about his experiences in 1997 called Klandestine Relationships, A Black Man's Odyssey in the Ku Klux Klan. And now his story is told in a new documentary that's currently available on demand from PBS. It's called Accidental Courtesy. Daryl Davis joins me today in Studio A. It's great to meet you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
We're also joined today by Dr. Ray Winbush. He's a research professor and the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Welcome back to the show, sir. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Tom.
Gilbert Bliss is a psychotherapist in private practice. He and his partner, Kathy Roberts, co-founded the Institute for Racial Awareness and Equity, which focuses on issues of race and white privilege. Dr. Bliss, welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you for the promotion, Tom, but Gil will do.
All right, Gil will do. Very good. Well, what do you all think? Can racism be reversed? You can call and join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, if you want to drop us a tweet, is @midday_TomHall. So, Daryl Davis, you say in this movie and in the book that when two enemies are talking, they're not fighting.
That is correct. I mean, you can have your worst enemies of extremes. But, you know, if you meet with your worst enemy for 5 minutes, you will find something in common. And if you spend 10 minutes with that individual, you'll find even more. And the more you find in common and build upon that, the less things matter that you have in contrast, as trivial as, say, skin color. And once you start building that relationship, it can turn into a friendship. But even if you don't agree on things, when two enemies are talking, they're not fighting. They might be yelling and screaming and disagreeing and pounding their fists at the table to drive home a point, but at least they're talking. It's when the talking ceases that the ground becomes fertile for violence.
One of the points you make, both at the beginning and then you come around to it again at the end of the film, is how can you hate me if you don't even know me?
Right.
And I was interested in that because I can actually think of a bunch of ways that folks can hate you without knowing you. Because, I mean, when we look at, for example, the rise in anti-Muslim sentiment in the United States, certainly since the last presidential election has taken place and the election of Mr. Trump, I mean, there have been, you know,
right.
documented instances of, you know, anti-Muslim hate groups forming. And these are people... They've never met a member of ISIS. They've
right.
never met, you know, a Muslim. These are a lot of folks that have never. They have no Muslims in their circle.
Right. And yes. And there are plenty of people who can hate me and who do hate me. But when I pose the question and I want an answer as to how and why, they can't seem to come up with one. That's my point. And how can you hate me when you don't even know me? Sure, they can express hate and either verbally or physically by attacking me or whatever. But when they try to justify it and give me an answer as to how they can do that, why they do it without knowing anything about me, they find themselves with a lack of an answer.
And Ray Wimbush, I mean, if this animus is a sort of deep down, visceral, unexplained, difficult to describe vitriol. And maybe Daryl is right. I mean, you probably are right, Daryl, that you know, they can't explain exactly why it is they don't like black people, but they have grown up not liking black people and they continue to not like black people in general. Is that something that can be reversed?
Well, I think it can be reversed, but I think they do tell you and others, and Daryl, I saw the film, why they do hate without, you know, being interactive with the person. They'll say, and, you know, I've read many neo-Nazis, KKK members who say, you know, we're a minority, we are being threatened, this nation is no longer a white nation, it was founded as such. And so I think that their reasons, though distorted as far as I'm concerned, you know, are anchored in what they believe is a threat to their very existence. And that, and out of that threat, which I, as a psychologist, I just see as fear, takes the form of hatred. It happened in South Africa during the apartheid era, that they were a white minority in a majority country of black. Of black folk. In this country, they are a majority in a country that is fast becoming non-white, and they feel threatened by that. Can a person who hates individually like that be converted? Yeah, I believe that happens, but I think that's only half of what the major issue is, and that's probably the only place I take issue with Daryl at, is that I think that systemic racism, as far as I'm concerned, is far more insidious and bad, if you please, than individual racism. These people are products of something.
Mm-hmm. And Gil Bliss, as a therapist who works with groups and individuals, what is that trajectory that goes from fear? We heard a lot about fear and anger, for example, during the campaign, these white voters who are disenfranchised and fearful and angry at a variety of things. And how does that lead directly to, you know, intolerance, bigotry, and hatred of something as benign as another race?
Well, I think of the tune from South Pacific, you have to be taught how to hate. And I think that's been an intergenerational thing for a long, long time. But the fear is the thing to address and to give room for expression and for people to actually consider other information. And people won't consider other information if they're afraid of that information. I'm thinking about the comment that one of the people made, you know, we're going to, don't want the white race to be squeezed out of existence.
This is one of the folks that Daryl confronts in the movie.
Film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
White genocide is called.
Yeah. White genocide.
Yeah.
Right.
So there are a couple of things about that. One is the absurdity that, you know, black men constitute 6% of the population. How are they going to take over the United States? But the other thing is you're talking about people believing, many white people believing that they're going to lose their whiteness as an advantage. It's been sort of the last bastion of being able to perceive yourself, if you perceive yourself that way, as having some kind of advantage.
Daryl, at one point in the movie, you say that the Ku Klux Klan is as American as baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
And indeed it is.
So just, I mean, it's so intrinsically intertwined with the fabric of American culture. But isn't that a horrible thing that it is? I mean, if that's true?
You know, that's the problem with this country. We deny our history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it all needs to be put out there. You know, when I was in high school, I'm 58 years old. I'll be 59 tomorrow. I'm not tomorrow, next month. When I was in high school, we were not taught that this country had internment camps for Japanese Americans. I did not learn that until I was in college. I was like, what? Are you kidding me? Are you serious? And I found out it was all true, you know, because it was a shameful blemish on our history. But we need to acknowledge the good, the bad, and the ugly. And yes, the Ku Klux Klan is an ugly part of our history, but is just as American as baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Why do you want to engage these folks? Why do you want to, for example, collect the paraphernalia and the costumes of their rituals and stuff? You've got this whole, you got 25, 26
I got more
robes
now.
Or something.
I have more now. But
why is it important for you to have those?
Okay, well, two answers, because you have two questions. Why do I want to engage them? Because they are my fellow Americans. They are your fellow Americans as well. And we all need to get to know one another and educate one another and expose each other. As Gil was saying, the fear needs to be addressed. I'll go back a step further before the fear. Before the fear, there's ignorance. Ignorance, if not kept in check, leads to fear. Because we fear that of which we don't know. If we don't keep that fear in check, that fear in turn would turn into hatred, because we hate those things that frighten us. If we don't keep that hatred in check, that hatred in turn will breed destruction, because we want to destroy those things that we hate. So if we can address the ignorance, there is a cure for ignorance, and that's called education and exposure. And that's why I engage these people, and I've been successful in doing it. Now, I'm not, so naive as to think that everybody that I meet or every Klansman or neo-Nazi is going to change. No, they're not. There will be those who, and nobody has a monopoly on racism or hatred. But there will be those people who will go to their graves being hateful, racist, and violent. But if I can spend a few minutes with somebody and they get something out of me that benefits them vicariously or directly, that's all the better. Now, as far as, and they change, and they give up they renounce their ideology, great. I want their robes and hoods, because I am building a museum. I got my 501c3, and I want to have a museum in which I can display that. It is our history. It should never be forgotten. And just like the Holocaust Museum, or the National Museum of African American History, these are things, that need to be in place. And I want you to contribute, my collection.
And Ray Wimbush, this gets back to the fundamental argument about assimilation versus segregation, mm-hmm. about whether it's in the best interest of people of color to be, melded into the other society, or to, stake out a good bit of independence, given the fact that there's so much undependability in white culture when it comes to housing, education, banking, you name it, for the white community towards people of color. You've written a lot about reparations as a dimension of this. Where do you think that argument within and without the black community stands now when it comes to assimilation versus
I have a late colleague of mine from Chicago, Bobby Wright, who used to say that there's only two ideologies in the African American community, that is either assimilationism or what they would call separation. There's other words for it, but the idea, so you see this in our own history. You see a Du Bois leaving this country and going to and dying in Ghana and so forth. In large, black folk and white folk want the same thing. I mean, there's no argument about that. The problem is that I believe, and I'm in good company, I think that we have to be more aware, you know, about what is the psyche of a white supremacist. And I think Brother Darryl tries to get at that, but I don't think that, you know, let's put it this way. If all of the people that you talk to, every last one of them, converted from their racism, white supremacy, and became integrationists, all of them, would racism end in this country?
I don't know, but it would be a start.
It would be a tiny start because, the tiny start, you know, I think that we want, and white America wants to focus on individual racism. So a lot of people will look at your film and they will say something like, boy, I'm not a member of the Klan. I'm not a neo-Nazi. I'm not a Christian identity person or anything else like that. But the issue is that we have a system that encourages that behavior, and it's more important for me as a psychologist and as an activist to say, how do we deal with the system? Those people who put Trump in office are the people I'm worried about, and probably none of them identify as being Klansmen. I'm sure that some of them do, but those people, that average soccer mom mm-hmm. and soccer dad in the Wisconsin, the suburbs may say, we don't like Muslim. Trump is our man.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've heard that argument before, and I understand that. And I'll say this, you know, every racist that I know, and I know quite a few of them, a whole bunch of them, every racist that I know voted for Trump. However, not everybody who voted for Trump is a racist.
I think they are.
I would dispute that. But nonetheless, you know, I've heard the argument about, you know, the concern about this systemic racism, and I get that. But you want to tear down the system. I want to help address the people who create the system, the people behind it.
But those people that create the system aren't the people that you're talking to. They are a product of a system that was already created.
You don't know that. You don't know that because, you know, I've talked to college graduates who are in the Klan and neo-Nazis.
I've talked to professors who are white supremacists.
And there have been presidents of the United States.
Like the one we have now.
Well, I don't know about that, but President Warren G. Harding was sworn into the Klan in the green room of the White House. Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black was a Klansman before he joined the Supreme Court. Senator Robert Byrd was a Klansman back in the 1940s. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been all educational levels.
It's a kind of a chicken and an egg argument to a certain extent of, you know, does one cause the other, or is one an outcome?
But, you know, these are people who are in our society in all kinds of jobs, school teachers, gas station attendants, or as he said, professors, what have you. And I think, you know, we need to address the people as well as the system.
Daryl Davis. He's a musician and the subject of a documentary called Accidental Courtesy, which is part of the PBS series Independent Lens. Dr. Ray Winbush is a research professor and the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. And Gilbert Bliss is a psychotherapist in private practice. He's also the co-founder of the Institute for Racial Awareness and Equity, which focuses on issues of race and white privilege. More when we return, plus your calls and emails, 410-662-8780. 780 is how you get in touch with us here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Great discussion going on. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the program, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Kevin Davis joins me to answer my questions and yours. Hope you can join us tomorrow for Midday. If you're just joining us on this President's Day edition of the program, we're talking about whether or not it's possible to reform racists. I'm joined by Gilbert Bliss, who's a psychotherapist in private practice. He's also the co-founder of the Institute for Racial Awareness and Equity, which focuses on issues of race and white privilege. Dr. Ray Winbush is a research professor and the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University and a widely published author. Daryl Davis is a musician and the subject of the documentary called Accidental Courtesy, which is currently streaming on PBS. For more than 25 years, Mr. Davis, who is a black man, has befriended members of the Ku Klux Klan, and as a result of those friendships, dozens of KKK members have left the Klan. You are welcome to join our conversation. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall, and our telephone number, 410-662-8780.
8780. So, Gil Bliss, you talk to folks in the workshops that you do about the very important dimension of white privilege as a premise for racism. Talk about that work a little bit.
Well, I'd certainly be happy to address that, but I also wanted to go back to the issue about assimilation and separation. And I'm always concerned about the use of the term assimilation because that's what's been used to essentially invite people who have come over to this country. When they become assimilated, essentially what they're doing is they're being invited to become white. And that has been historically shown with the Irish, with Polish people who have come over, and they've been able to assimilate, and that is to become white. So that essentially becomes one of the foundations for white privilege, which is so much a topic of what Kathy Roberts and I talk about. I don't know how Dr. Winbush might feel about this, Ray, if I may, but this whole thing of separation, there was a time, and there was a documentary about Baltimore at one time that talked about how there were black communities in Baltimore and people who lived together and had stores together and all of that, and how those were disrupted and dismantled partly by the manipulation of the crack epidemic. But I think the operative term here is when people talked about separation, when they talk about separate but equal, you know, let's keep equal in the equation. If communities want to live together, fine. But if they're going to be treated differently by living in that particular community, then that takes that whole subject of fairness out of the equation. With regard to something that Daryl mentioned about education, I think it's really critical, and that's part of what Kathy and I are doing, is we've invited other whites, and eventually that's been the people who have come to our presentations, although there have been people of color and certainly been welcome and interested in their opinions. They offer a special outlook on what we do. But part of what we are looking to do is educate people. And the effort to educate in particular white people about the real history of the black experience and the white experience to help them understand how there's been a lot that's been left out. And it could be important to know about. But we don't go in with the sense of telling them what's real. We go in the sense of consider this. Take it in and think about who you are, how you got here, and maybe reconsider it, but never with a bludgeon.
Mm-hmm. And Daryl Davis, one of the things that struck me about the movie is the risk that you might take in what we might refer to as normalization of an opposing view, a normalization of a bigoted view of a racist perspective. You talked to one guy named Pastor Thomas Robb, who is the minister to the Grand Knights of the KKK. He struck me as a very fundamentally bigoted individual who doesn't lack for education. I mean, you could say to Pastor Robb, you know, look, there is simply no difference between you and I other than the color of our skin. That didn't seem to me to be even approaching a convincing argument to a guy like this. So taking him seriously, being patient as you were with him in the clips that we saw of your interaction, was discomforting to me as a viewer, because I'm looking at this saying, you know, here's a guy who is just a complete bigot, and at some point you have to say, you do not deserve the respect and the grace of being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've known Pastor Robb for probably almost 30 years. And yes, he is a bigot. You know, you only saw a very short portion of him in the film, but you know, there was a lot more that was shot. And at one point, he said to me, and it was caught on camera, but was not included in the movie. He said, you know, I don't know if I'm right or wrong. One day we will find out. And so he had begun to admit, for the first time that I've heard him admit it. And like I said, I've known him for a long time. That he might possibly be wrong. Now, I know he's wrong, okay? But I don't consider myself normalizing him. I'm giving him a platform. Because in giving him a platform to express his views, He is exposing himself, and that's what we need. There is a taboo on the topic of racism, and we need more people to put the spotlight on it so people can see how bad it is, how ridiculous it is. So I'm giving him that platform. All right, but in return, he reciprocates and gives me a platform. But I'd like to ask a question, because, you know, I'm not a trained psychologist or psychotherapist, psychoanalyst, anything like that, but I have two experts here. I'm of the impression, and I would like to know from a psychotherapist and psychologist standpoint, I'm under the impression that racism is a form of mental illness. And I've heard arguments both ways. And people say, well, it doesn't belong to the DSM-5 or whatever it is. That doesn't mean anything to me. I think it's a form of mental illness. But I'd like to hear both Gil and Ray address that.
Ray Wimbush?
Well, you know, I think before you said you knew Francis Gresser Welsing, Dr. Yes. Welsing, who recently passed. I mean, I see racism as a system. And so just like you may have a system of, tuberculosis, you know, and within that system, individuals get infected with it. That's how I view racism. To me, the most important thing is to deal with the system. I want to wipe out tuberculosis so that nobody gets it. You seem to say, let's go to each individual who has tuberculosis rather than the cause of it. So you know, and I hope this is not a jump in logic, but you had Adolf Hitler, you know, killing Jews and other people during the Holocaust. And it wasn't until they got rid of Hitler that the racism, and I'm not saying there still isn't racism in Germany, but as a disease model, those skinheads who are still in Germany arose out of that system. Their parents or grandparents or some of the young people. So I don't see, I think it's important what you're doing, but I don't think it's the only thing that you should be doing. And I think it's like half of a very important equation. I spend probably 90% of my time dealing with systems, you know, and a minor part dealing with individuals. Yeah. I've talked to Klansmen,
right,
too.
Sure, of course. And, I'm not disputing, you know, that what you're doing isn't working, but I would say, you know, I'm doing what I do best, and I think, you know, we need all kinds of approaches to eradicate racism in this country.
What do you get out of it?
What do I get out of it?
Yeah. Well, I know what they say they're getting out of it.
Oh, I know what they're getting out of it. Okay.
What are they getting out of it?
They're getting a new lease on life. They're beginning to see the wrong of their ways, and they're changing. I even have former Klansmen come out and speak with me against their former organizations. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I'm getting out of it. That's what they're getting out of it. Mm-hmm. I've already been there. Okay, I know the way it's supposed to be, how we should live together. Mm-hmm. They're discovering that. So yes, they're getting something out of it, and so am I. But I think it takes any kind of approach where I'm dealing with the individuals, you're dealing with the system. We both need to work towards eradicating
Mark
racism.
Potok from the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's featured in the
right.
film, says
he didn't
the difference between wholesale and retail,
right.
Saying that they're trying to eliminate these organizations and you're trying to convert them. I do want to pick up on that, but I want to go to the phones. We've got a bunch of folks online. Paul in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having this conversation.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, my name's Paul Rucker. I'm an artist that's been working around Klan for a while. A couple of years ago, I made a new Klan robe a week in different colors and different forms. And in the process of studying the Klan and the impact of the Klan, especially the second wave of the Klan in the 1920s, when there were more than 4 to 6 million members of the Klan, it was like 15% of our population, I found that, you know, the Klan was a significant part of our country, and it is as much of our country as, you know, hot dogs, apple pie, baseball. But I have to agree with the psychologist. If you were to actually get rid of the Klan, they're not the biggest threat right now. The biggest threat right now is our systemic and structural racism in institutions in our regular country, the disparity in access to jobs, to health care, to housing. This is the biggest threat right now, and I think that's where the focus needs to be put on. I think it's really important to have education about our history, but we need to have equal access to educational programs. We need to have equal access to everything. So looking at systemic and structural racism, I think, is far more important than disassembling the Klan one member at a time. That's just my opinion.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate your thoughts. I disagree, but that's fine.
Carol Anderson, a scholar from Emory University, calls it the cloud of racial innocence that whites sit under because we equate, white people have sort of appropriated the term racism to mean these extreme examples of it, the folks that you're talking to, the guys who are in the Klan, the guys and women who are in the Klan, when in fact there are all sorts of people who are not in the Klan but are still, you know, living in a world of white privilege that, that as you say, Ray Wimbush, you know, perpetuates these systems. Let's go to the phones again. Donna in Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
And you, all your guests are providing some very good perspectives. And piggybacking off of what everybody's talking about, I wanted to get their perspective on the trauma of how racism impacts people of color as well as whites, because in the white community, it's conditioned and taught to be a you know, to go against other groups of people. And sometimes that's being taught as young as when they're born, when babies are born. They start, in, you know, putting this system in the mindset. So it's stored in the subconscious and sometimes come out in the conscious. My question is, I many years ago had to go to counseling to deal with being in a racist environment. I did not understand it because my parents did not. Explain to me what they went through with the segregation, but they didn't explain to me how to handle it. So I had to go and actually be taught from a specialist, a psychologist who specialized in racism. And once I understood it, when it smacked me in the face when I go out in the real world, I know how to adjust and deal with it from being taught. My question to your guests, all your guests, is how have you had to deal with the trauma of racism with your white and or black clients or in your research? And I can take that question off the air, and I just want to hear your responses. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call, Don. I appreciate it. Gil Bliss?
I think it's been so important in the course of my own education to bring the issue of racism into the therapy room. It's something I had never done before. And the awareness Tariq Touré brought up with regard to intergenerational racism, I think is very important.
He's an activist here in Baltimore who is featured in the film.
That's right. Thank you. And to help people understand, you know, where they are on this spectrum and to know, and I've been learning about something called liberation-based healing, which involves people understanding where they are in the context of their world. And if their world includes being subjugated or being perpetrated upon by a racist system, then I think it's important that they know that they aren't necessarily the problem, that the system itself is the problem. And my own awareness of that has helped me with regard to working with certain clients.
I want to play a little clip from the movie Accidental Courtesy. This is a conversation that Daryl Davis has with a guy named Jeff Scoop. He's the leader of the Nationalist Social Movement, part of the alt-right.
He's the leader of the biggest neo-Nazi movement in the country.
Right. Here's a little bit of that conversation.
My experience living amongst many black people is that a lot of them feel that white people have oppressed them and held them down.
Is there any truth to that at all?
I don't feel there is.
Really?
I don't feel there is.
When they were brought over here against their will, forced to work for nothing, their women were raped by the slave masters, their children were sold on the courthouse steps.
As far as slavery is concerned, it was a travesty, a human travesty, and it was something that should have never happened and should have never taken place, and it was very unfortunate, even though it's been hundreds of years, and some of the animosity, I think, is still there.
Even go back 50 years, we still had Jim Crow laws. This was, 100 years after slavery, and we still see it lingering today. I'm not justifying hatred, but I'm just giving you a reason why there is some animosity there.
So, Daryl Davis, you make a very good argument. And I just wonder, is that argument going to be enough to persuade a guy like Mr. Scoop?
It plants a seed. You know, nobody changes overnight. It plants a seed. And the people, that have... Now, you said something about me converting these people. I never set out to convert anybody. That was never my mission. My mission was just to find out, how can you hate me when you don't know me? But in the process of that conversation, I have been the impetus and influence for them converting themselves. and I've planted seeds. And I'm sure, you know, Jeff Scoop has taken that seed. If that seed is nourished, I believe Jeff Scoop can change, yeah.
Let me ask you one quick question before we take a break. And this is a question that's been on my mind, and then we've heard by tweet from Adar Ayira, who is very involved in a group called the Baltimore Racial Justice Action. She says, Mr. Davis has identified many of these white supremacists as his friends.
I have.
You call them your friend. Do they ID you as their friend?
Some of them do, some of them do not, yes.
What does friend mean in that concept?
Friend means someone who you can sit down with, get along with, share opinions with, not necessarily agree 100% with, but have a friendly conversation. I mean, I just met you. I don't know anything about you, but I would call you a friend. I would call these two gentlemen here a friend, even though, you know, we may have some differing points of view.
Well, I appreciate being called a friend. Always happy to be a friend, especially of you three guys, and better than the alternative. All right, we're going to take a little break. Dr. Ray Winbush is a research professor and director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Gil Bliss is a psychotherapist in private practice. Daryl Davis is a musician and the subject of the documentary called Accidental Courtesy, which is currently available on demand from PBS. We'll have more with them when we return. But first, before we take a break, on Mondays, it is our practice here on Midday to acknowledge by name the people who have been murdered in the city of Baltimore. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we hold their families in our hearts in their hour of grief. So far in this new year, 47 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. Three people were the victims of a homicide in Baltimore last week. They are Sir Moody, age 27, Iran Timmons, age 46, and Bryant Beverly. He was 18 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall here on this President's Day edition of the show. Glad you are with us. If you've just joined us, we're talking about converting or at least befriending the Klan. My guests are Daryl Davis. He's a musician and the subject of the documentary Accidental Courtesy, which is currently streaming on PBS.org. Gilbert Bliss is a psychotherapist in private practice and the co-founder of the Institute for Racial Awareness and Equity. Ray Winbush, Dr. Ray Winbush, is a research professor and the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. You can join our conversation 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @midday. Tom Hall. Gil Bliss, before we hear another little clip from the movie, let me have you answer Daryl Davis's question about mental illness. Is racism a mental illness?
As such, I don't believe so. I think what it is, it's part of a person's life position, and there are many things that people use to help themselves feel better. And I think racism can be part of that because it offers the element of being better than someone else. But I think I don't think I would put it in the DSM-5, which you were exactly right.
And that's the medical manual that
right, the diagnostic and statistical manual. Mm-hmm. But I think it's part of an overall life position that people take that doesn't work for them.
What about Ray?
No, I don't think it's mental illness at all. I think it's the behavior that people learn, and they can unlearn it, as you're showing, but I don't think it's a mental illness. Otherwise, I would probably classify half of the people in the United States as being mentally ill.
That might be why they don't put it in the DSM.
Well, it is, and my friend Bobby Wright, the late Bobby Wright, who was a psychologist, tried to get it classified because he was on the board of DSM-2 a long time ago. And he tried to get it, and they fought against that because they said it was too prevalent to put in to the DSM.
That's interesting. Too prevalent.
Yeah, right. Too prevalent.
Too big to
true
fail.
Story,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Let's listen to some interaction that Daryl has in this movie, Accidental Courtesy, with a few Baltimore activists, Kwame Rose, Tariq Ture, and J.C. Falk.
I would just want to know what the end goal is. It's for the layman on the Latrobe Projects, who is it? receiving all the ills of white supremacy and that hate, right, at on a day-to-day level, how do they even begin to even think about that conversation that you're engaging in?
My end goal is to bring people together, okay? Bring white supremacists together with their nemesis. Unless we learn how to get along with one another. This country is
about... Well, why I gotta get along with them?
Good question, Daryl Davis. Why does anybody have to get along with somebody from the Klan?
Because they are our fellow Americans, again. This is our society. We all have to get along. We all have to educate one another as to what wrongs we commit, what wrongs we believe. And you get to that point by learning from one another. That's why we have International Day at school, where different kids bring dress in their native attire or bring their native foods so we can understand one another. It's not that we have to approve of each other's behavior or each other's beliefs or accept them even, but we have to learn how to get along and sit down and have a conversation with one another.
Haleem in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Daryl Davis, Gil Bliss, and Ray Winbush.
Yes, how y'all doing today?
Good, thanks. Thanks for your call. Thanks.
Right. Okay, so for me, I heard Dr. Winbush talk about the system of racism and white supremacy. And in my thought, the worst station that African Americans can be in is to be dependent upon a system that is designed to, at best, keep you in an inferior position. And considering the fact that as African Americans we have the most educated class in the developing world. We have over $1 billion worth of annual income. We have doctors, we have plumbers, we have engineers. We have every resource to create our own system where we can benefit from. I don't understand why this current crop of leaders continue to push us into the system that is designed to keep us inferior.
Thanks for the call, Haleem. You know, the organization Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, Davon Love and some of those cats, you know, thinking the same way. Black communities need their own banks. They need their own schools, need their own real estate agents, et cetera.
Well, we have had that. I mean, we had it in places like Rosewood and Greenwood, you know, projects or, you know, Black Wall Street back in the 1920s. See, and I think that what Haleem said is very important. I think that, you know, Dr. King himself said that, you know, he thought out loud once in a meditation, am I integrating my people into a burning house, you know? And I think leaders like Davon Love and, you know, Adam Jackson are, you know, dealing with those type of issues. And real quick, I'd be remiss as a professor if I didn't mention a book. There's a book by Benjamin DeMott, who's an economist at Cornell University. When I was teaching, running the Race Relations Institute at Fisk, I brought him down there. He had wrote a book called The Trouble with Friendship. And in the book, he said that black people could be friends with white people, but white people have more difficulty being friends with black people. And he said, because they're constantly thinking about race. And I've had conversations with white people, several, and in the middle of the conversation, somebody will ask me kind of almost a non sequitur about racism or race. And I'm shocked at it. And I'm not looking at that person at that point in a racial manner. And so I think that, you know, a lot of times the people that I saw in that video and the use of the word friendship that, you know, I'm not sure that any of those people are your friends.
Well, you don't know those people, but I do.
No, but I'm looking at what DeMott says is that it's mediated by race. Friends don't mediate things by race if it's an interracial relationship. They just say, I accept you as a human being, as a person, and so forth. But if a person is saying race is always in my relationship with you constantly, I don't see that as friendship.
Kimberly Richards, who runs a thing, or she's one of the principals of an organization called the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, runs anti-racism workshops called Undoing Racism across the country. And I attended one for a couple of days last summer. It was sponsored by the Deutsch Foundation here in Baltimore and had a bunch of artists in particular who were assembled to talk about this. And one of the points that she made in her presentation that basically only white people can be racists, that this is a problem of white people. This is not a problem that black people have. Yet there is a sentiment on the alt-right when people talk about institutional racism. You'll hear people on the alt in the what we've come to know generally as the alt-right saying, well, what about black racism towards white people? I mean, Gil Bliss, where do you stand on that?
Well, I think that's another way of displaying your white fragility or white frailty, that somehow there is some way that I can possibly be have the same experience that black people have had for hundreds of years. It's a way of maintaining a position.
Here's an interesting email from Leo, who says, could your guests address more cynical breeds of racism, i.e. racism that's presented simply to provoke? I sense a lot of people on the alt-right and their adherents are using racism as a cultural fire, not necessarily a deeply held belief. When it is used at Klan rallies with the burning crosses and the hoods and the people strutting down the street, it is Daryl Davis, you know, simply to provoke whatever community it's taking place in. Is there a particular response to that sort of provocative dimension of overt bigotry?
Sure, there's a response to it. But let me just say one thing also. You know, we keep saying white people. No. What Ray and Gil are talking about, in my opinion, are white Americans, not necessarily white people from Europe. Okay, it's a whole different thing over there. I lived in Africa for 10 years. I lived in Europe. And there are big differences between the way people are treated in these places, and what goes on there then goes on here. And in terms of people not calling each other friends, I mean, if you're going to say that I can't be friends with a white supremacist or whatnot, I mean...
No, you can.
But they can't be with me.
Yes.
Okay, but what about Jews and Catholics? What about Protestants different. And Catholics? What's different about it?
DeMott didn't talk about... He wasn't talking about Jews or Catholics or... Jews and any or Catholics, and where he specifically talked about Benjamin DeMott in his book, The Trouble with Friendship.
So how did his book become the Bible or something?
See, it was the Bible. Yours is the Bible. Mine is Bible. All I'm saying is that his premise is that whites have more trouble dealing with issues of race than black people do, and it mediates their interactions with black people.
Okay, I would say that whites in this country, in the United States of America, have more issues dealing with blacks because they have more guilt for what they have done to us. Wait a minute, hold on. Because a lot of blacks, Eartha Kitt, Josephine Baker, Memphis Slim, many, many others, moved where? To France. Where they were treated equally.
Right. Well, unfortunately, we've got to make that the last comment. I apologize, but we are out of time, and I very much appreciate all three of you coming and joining this very animated conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Yeah. Daryl Davis is the subject of the documentary by Matt Orenstein called Accidental Courtesy. It's part of the Independent Lens series. You can catch it on demand on pbs.org and as of tomorrow on iTunes, and we'll have a link on our website, wypr.org/midday. Gil Bliss is a psychotherapist and the co-founder of the Institute for Racial Awareness and Equity. Dr. Ray Winbush is a research professor and the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Kevin Davis joins me for the hour. We'll talk about the police department's continuing efforts to curb gun violence, plus the consent decree. What changes can we expect? When can we inspect them? And how is the department building greater trust with communities of color? That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. I'd like to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today for our guests. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner. They've got breakfast served on the weekends as well. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. MidwayUSA.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening to Midday. Appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your holiday. We'll see you tomorrow.